Hi, this is Joseph G of ManhattanStatNet and Doraville.org. We're here to talk about Georgia politics on the Georgia Politics Podcast. First, I'd like the panelists to introduce themselves. We'll start to my right.
I'm Rusty Tanton. I co-founded the Georgia Podcast Network and blog at RadicalGeorgiaModerate.org.
Shelby Highsmith of Shelbinator.com.
Griff Drift of Drifting Through the Grift.
Randy Lewis of Georgia Daily Digest and GeorgiaPoliticalDigest.com.
Joe Winter with JoeVentures.com and BlogLanta.com.
Grayson Daughters, Spacey Gracie Review, and sometimes Peach Pundit.
The thing that I thought was most interesting this legislative session was how, you know, the Senate, the House, and the governor are all controlled by the Republican Party, and they couldn't seem to get along at all. They couldn't seem to talk to each other, and at the end, for a while, it looked like we were actually going to have a special session to nail down a budget. So, James, I just wanted to go to you and say, you know, in the battle of Sunny versus the House versus the Senate, who won?
I think the ultimate winner in the people of Georgia's eyes is going to be Casey Cable. He's the only one that really displayed any sort of level of leadership in this whole feud. The interesting thing is a lot of the sort of hardcore conservative wing of the Republican Party has been rallying around Glenn Richardson. But I think the general public, you know, they don't get down into the wonky details that people like us do. All they see is the 30-second clip on the 6 o'clock news. And they're going to see, you know, Casey Cable up there laughing, joking, and sort of rising above the fray, while Sonny and Glenn, you know, get into talking about mooning each other. So ultimately, Casey Cable is going to win this, and I think that was sort of his goal from the outset. You know, we're seeing the preview right now for 2010 for the governor's race, and Cable's out of the gate first.
Sounds like I heard that they've even kind of carried this fight over into the Georgia Republican convention recently.
It's still going on, and it will probably continue to go on. What's happened, I think, is that the Speaker has forgotten to read the Constitution. And although he plays a very big role in the legislative process, the governor always gets the last word, and he seems to have forgotten that. And he thinks he should have the last word. And he's not exceptionally bright. And it's starting to show. In one respect, that I think the Republicans have started to act like the Democrats, in a sense, when they had control. It was just lots of infighting and backbiting and inter-party squabbles. And the same thing has happened with the Republicans. They've proven that they are no different from the Democrats in that sense. They are acting just like they did.
It was a little bit of Zell Miller, Tom Murphy redux, but the difference is they've been in power for like 3 years as opposed to those guys being there for 30 years. It was like they wanted to grab the brass ring and pull as hard as they could immediately.
Yeah, it seems like there's a little bit more of a power struggle there that's like kind of out for everybody to see rather than behind the scenes.
And the other thing that was astonishing about it is when the Speaker had his problems at the beginning of the session with accusations made about him and ethics and things of that sort, the governor stood by him. And you would expect that there would have been a payback, being shown. Because he very easily could have been bounced from being the Speaker if the governor hadn't stood there with him and said, this is the guy. But, you know, apparently those kinds of issues don't mean anything to the Speaker.
Now, what does this say about the fact that last year people were talking about Sonny Perdue as a possible VP pick for the Republican Party, and now he's got his in-state Republican base so angry about him over the fact that he would veto a tax cut as opposed to do something smart like put it in the reserves? Like, what does that say about the Georgia Republican Party's ability to play a role at all in the national politics? Have they slaughtered their main offering?
Well, there's no way in hell that Sonny Perdue could ever be vice president of the Republican administration. First off, it's now the reddest, or among the reddest of the red states. So picking Sonny Perdue for governor does not bring you Georgia's electoral votes. They're already there. And the second thing is Sonny hasn't done anything to distinguish himself. Vice presidents, you know, the general rule when you're selecting them, and I've worked on three presidential campaigns at the national staff level, you know, when you're talking about picking a vice president, you want to make sure the first rule is do no harm. And Sonny doesn't fill that role. He's never distinguished himself on any issue. He's never staked out a position and said this was important and saw it through to the end. He's proposed ethics legislation for Georgia now, I think, 5 years running, and it was the first thing he traded away at the beginning of every legislative session. So in terms of distinguishing himself at the national level, he hasn't done that. And then he certainly brings nothing to the table being from Georgia.
Unlike Charlie Crist, who could bring a 30 electoral vote swing state just to the south of us.
And who is starting out as perhaps one of the most loved politicians I recall seeing.
It's on both sides.
What's he polling at, 85%, something like that?
He's polling at 60% amongst Democrats. I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Other kind of interesting sidebar about the legislature, seems like Ben Harbin, chair of the Appropriations Committee, was recently charged with drunk driving?
Yeah.
And recently there's some speculation that maybe it has to do with he was going to see some lobbyist late at night.
All alleged,
yes.
I think he was looking at Lanning's, bro.
Yeah, I think he had a new tattoo. He wanted to show it off at Lanning's. Got a little trouble there. But that's all speculative.
Everything's alleged.
Alleged.
There's possibly a virus running through the legislature.
Well, it's the old thing of it's a lot easier to be a back row bomb thrower than to be a leader.
Right.
Same thing happened to Newton Republicans after 94. You know, you get your hands on the wheel and
it comes off.
Oh wow, we've got to drive.
Well, yeah, you've actually got to drive down the road instead of like into the ditch.
Well, you know, they had a rough session, so he going out and relaxing.
He was apparently very relaxed.
Quite relaxed.
The only actual race that we have to look forward to right now is the 10th district, and Jim Whitehead is the. In the lead, it appears, Republican. And I think that it's been kind of interesting. One of the things that he said is, I think it was the direct quote was, Iraq has not been a big thing in our district. Do you think that would actually, you know, come back to hurt him, or do you think it's basically just going to be a wash? And
I understand what he said, and I agree with him. I don't think Iraq is that big of a deal in that district. There literally is a left side of the district, and it's Athens, and that's about the only area where you're going to see moderate and liberal votes. The rest of the district is probably 60-65% conservative, and I would bet, and also includes a number of military, retired military folks in that district. So I would be willing to bet that it's not going to be an issue that people are going to vote on there.
But I think that was enough. There was enough publicity surrounding that statement that people would find it offensive, conservative, liberal, radical, whatever. They've lost 100 soldiers now from the 10th. I think the tally is they just hit 100 last week. And anybody's family in the 10th that has, you know, a son or daughter in Iraq right now is certainly going to pick their ears up about a comment like that. It just seems so flip and unaware and out of touch.
Yeah.
Although immigration is important.
Right. Yeah, I actually think you make a great point, because this sort of points to the landmine that the Iraq issue is going to be in the OE election.
Exactly, and I think the whole country is thus going to be watching this. So they've already, you know, some media has picked up this issue. It's the litmus test for how are conservatives going to treat the Iraq war as we move toward OA. How is it going to affect really Republicans almost? Because we all know pretty much how, you know, the Democrat candidates are going to come down. But how are Republicans, the presidential candidates? So I think they're kind of looking to see how the Republican base is going to weigh this issue.
Yeah, and I think his comment was really just sort of a crass political analysis, you know, that issue in that district is not going to generate a for or against kind of vote.
An inartful way of stating the obvious.
But it wasn't a politics statement.
It was a gimme for him. He's like, you're right, it was a crass political statement. It's Iraq plays well in my district. I don't have to guard that flank.
Right.
That's what it was,
and it
was a completely idiotic thing to say, and it came off as that way. And
it's what you say to your campaign manager, you don't say public.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. And the interesting thing, the corollary to that, I think, is that I think Marlow, although I don't think he stands a chance, is running a pretty savvy campaign, almost in a Karl Rove fashion, of you go after your opponent's strength. So I think it is going to be interesting to see how it is going to be sort of a laboratory of can the Democrats really attack a conservative district on the war.
Well, the one thing that needs to be remembered is he doesn't have to win the election. He just has to force a runoff.
Right.
And so while that even is a lofty goal at this point, it's not totally unrealistic.
Do you really think he'll force a runoff?
Yeah. I'll make a prediction right now. I think that the runoff will be Marlowe and Whitehead. And I think that the final will be narrower than the 60-40 spread it should be.
Really? It'll be 55. Well,
if he forces a runoff, you know, we're going to see some national press attention.
Oh,
we're
going
to see the big guys come down here and pay some attention.
Who else would be in the runoff? This crazy Bill Green guy?
Not after his son's little cinematography.
Well, wow, what about that?
He's
got the kid like filming Bible study and putting it on YouTube. He's got a press secretary that, although Bill Green disputes this, allegedly punched a pickup truck.
Well, then again, the pickup truck was coming to run over him, wasn't it? You know, it was for Whitehead's campaign. I mean, these people were nuts.
Which I just loved all of us, like good old-fashioned Georgia politics. Fights, affairs, drunkenness, it's great.
And again, this highlights another thing that I'm saying. Even if the Republicans are in trouble in 08, either here in Georgia or nationally, at some point, the Democrats have to put up somebody credible in order to take it. And so far, that's just not looking very promising.
No, it's not.
One thing that I think is most interesting about the 10th district race is how much kind of new media that I've actually seen focusing on this race. And part of that's probably because it's the only thing going on right now. And we did see a little bit of it in the Taylor Purdue race, you know, a few months ago, but it's kind of gone out of control. And Rusty, you've done some of that.
I made a couple of ads. My ads, I made an ad. Mine was one of the first two ads that focused on his Iraq quote, which was the one we brought up earlier. Not a big thing in our district, and the street committee made was the one that actually got some attention from the Associated Press, and the sort of first article ran on it, and it actually did bring that into the mainstream media's focus for a couple of weeks, and did make Jim Whitehead have to answer some questions about Iraq that he might not have had to answer otherwise. The most effective ad, I think, actually came out of some folks who are very conservative types, and they showed some footage of Whitehead and his sort of flip-flopping on immigration. And I think that out of all the new media stuff that came out on that, it's actually that one that, if it got some wider airplay, would be a much more effective ad, because I think it would make some Republicans sit out or vote for a different Republican candidate.
Do you think any Republicans in the 10th are going to cross over and vote Democrat this go around? No. Do you think that is
probably
possible?
Not.
Yeah. I mean, Marlowe is such a centrist. Does he have no appeal to the Republican base, the Whitehead's Republican base?
Well, you know, blogging on Daily Cause or Coast isn't helping him much.
No.
You know, he as far as his positions, my understanding of everything he does is that he actually is a pretty moderate Democrat, but he doesn't position himself that way, blogging on Daily Coast. I mean, those folks are just as crazy as the
he's making,
you know,
let's come home from Iraq like his central issue.
Yeah.
When it's like, oh, well, you're really going to tip the scales. You.
And we heard about Marlowe, what his views on immigration are. I mean, might he pick up, you know, Whitehead's strength and talk about immigration? I haven't heard Marlowe address immigration at all.
No, which
am I missing something?
I still think that's a smart move for an insurgent candidate like that, is don't get spread too thin on the issues. Mm. Pick one and go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of new media, is it just that lacking, you know, this not being a big budget race and lacking a full ticket to generate any other kind of media buzz? Is it just the politics abhors a vacuum, and so we've got this opportunity to do this thing on the internet?
I definitely think that I wouldn't be paying attention to that race if this were a normal election cycle. If there was anything else to do, I seriously doubt I would even know who Jim Whitehead is. If
it's just because it's the only show.
Yeah, it's the only show in town. So it, and plus he makes a bunch of bonehead quotes that draw a lot of attention to himself. So and he deserves it.
God, yeah, I mean, God bless his campaign manager. I mean, I would just be.
That guy should never work again.
Well, I think he's probably done a pretty good job, because, I mean, he said some stupid things, but this guy, I see him as like a potential to, you know, have a cop incident. And so far, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this guy will get into Congress. And,
it's out there waiting. I'm really surprised.
I mean, he's just a walking time bomb. Yeah, he really is. I mean, he's, you know, I don't know how this guy ever advanced to this level of politics, because it, just every time he opens his mouth, something stupid comes out.
Sounds like a politician to me.
Does anyone think that that things like blogs and video clips online and podcasts, any of that stuff, is actually affecting or is going to affect kind of how people start voting in the future in this race and future races? I think Grayson, you wrote something.
I'm just curious this issue. I think we're starting to going to turn a corner. In other words. I don't think we're going to see any big blip on any radar right now, but people are testing the waters. They're sticking a toe into the pool to see, are we going to be able to impact politics with new media here in Georgia? Well, we're already, you know, people are giving it a try, and they're starting, and they're doing something. So, in other words, whether this is going to be measurable in this election in the 10th, I don't know. I mean, I doubt it, but I think as we move forward, I think the pollsters are going to start to get in on this. The pollsters are going to start asking people questions. Were you influenced by a YouTube video you saw? Did that get you to the polls or not? Did you change your mind about anything because of something you saw online? I think that once the pollsters jump in and we start getting that data back, then these campaign advisors will stop making these grandiose, you know, complete BS statements about new media. It's not going to have any impact whatsoever. It's still the old way. You know, they're already making these statements, but they don't have any sort of data to back that up. I think we're going to get some as we move toward 08, and 08 is just going to be a freaking field day.
Yeah. Well, and local saying that it's going to have no impact whatsoever should probably go and tell the national presidential campaigns that they could save a lot of money by ignoring it, but
yeah,
they're not.
Yeah, shut down your, you know, I mean, what Edwards is doing online.
We have no idea how to quantify it, but kind of like the first nuclear physicists who are moving piles of uranium closer to each other going, God, I hope we don't set the atmosphere on fire. We're playing with it.
And exactly.
And the one thing I would add to that is
we're in the game.
The 10th is very unique in that there is no competition to the political play that's going on right now. And no matter what data comes out of the 10th, I don't think we should take that as gospel at this point. Because we're talking about a special election in the middle of summer that probably 95% of Georgia doesn't even know is happening.
Right.
So you've already got a very tiny sample. And then there's the tinier sample of the people that have actually been online and read blogs and YouTube. I think
he's
you're
kind
right.
of sitting in his room here right now.
And our YouTube audience. In every presidential campaign, there's always this, historically, there's always this undercurrent of rumor and stories that are both true and untrue, and they've influenced little things here and there that campaigns have done, but they've never been able to have a mass distribution. So they've never actually directed the campaign to change its policies or flow or anything of that sort. And I think what's going on, my own view as sort of the old guy, is that this is really institutionalization or formalization of that undercurrent that's going on in communities all over America, and it now has a channel. And so I think what's going to happen is some of those things that happen that are the rumor and the story will boil up to the national level more quickly, because there's this channel now that people can at least visit if they want to occasionally and find those things.
Do you think that in smaller, lower budget races like this, the candidates ought to be making more use of the model of things like the YouTube spotlight? You know, it's one thing when 30, 40 people upload a response video to one of the presidential candidates, and then they pick three and the candidate responds. But Marlowe and Whitehead and even Green would have an opportunity to talk to a lot of people directly in this way. Do you think
Absolutely. I don't think they're exploiting that the way they can right now, because it's so affordable. I mean, it's essentially free.
It took me 3 hours to make that video.
Yeah, but here's the problem that you have to cross is the digital divide. And the one thing that we get very spoiled on living in the Atlanta metro area is you get out of the metro area, you get out of the metro Augusta area at 10, and a lot of people still do not have internet access. And if they do, it is not DSL because the lines aren't there.
They have Wi-Fi at Raven County, in other words, what you're trying to tell me.
They
ain't got no Wi-Fi.
Exactly.
In Raven County.
There are very few Starbucks in Blairsville, although there may be one now. But the point is
if you're in Augusta.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is I don't know. Yes, it's very easy to produce the product, but is it very easy to get it to the consumer?
Right. Well, exactly. In the more rural areas in the South, particularly, I imagine, the traditional media does have the advantage.
Yes.
I think that's going to change, though. You know, obviously that's changing on a daily basis.
Well, you know, one other thing is that the sort of new media stuff oftentimes doesn't so much get to the constituents directly so much as attracts the attention of the mainstream press.
Exactly.
And gets them to focus on an issue they wouldn't have otherwise focused on.
Exactly.
And the Banner Herald would.
And yeah, the Banner Herald probably wouldn't have talked about Iraq and Jim Whitehead.
Right, and the local Raven County paper, for instance, could pick up a story about a YouTube clip.
Yeah.
And the thing about viral video is it's also a word-of-mouth phenomenon. And I love to use the example of how someone called me up that doesn't even have a computer and told me every frame of the John Edwards hairdo video. They don't even have a computer, but somehow somebody told them all about it, and they thought that was the greatest thing they've ever heard of. They had not even seen it. They didn't even own a computer, but they had heard about it. So there's still a word-of-mouth aspect. If there's
that
something...
undercurrent.
Exactly. Yeah. It's pulling into that. That undercurrent is bubbling up. People will talk about it, you know, sitting around at the gas station, the Starbucks, wherever. They're going to talk about John Edwards' hairdo video.
When's the point that campaigns start noticing it? And I think it's kind of already started, but they start noticing it and start funneling money into these attempts and kind of resources. You know, you've started hearing little bits. I mean, there was the whole thing about...
Well, they're welcome to call me with any money they
want. Because I live in my...
Absolutely. My number is 404.
Well, there was that Hillary 1984 clip where they compared Hillary's campaign to the... You know, it was the 1984 Apple commercial.
That was a very clever video.
And, you know, it was someone who was consulting for Obama who had done that. And I think we're going to see a lot more.
He was on the payroll, I believe, in that incident.
Yeah.
But like 2 degrees away, he was not directed by the Obama campaign to do that. That was,
no, he took it on
that would have been illegal.
Creative impulses to go for that. But it was very good, but it cost a lot of
I think it's
issues for the campaign.
It's going to cause some tricky legality issues, too. I have a feeling that, you know, where does the line cross between, you know, some blogger creating a political ad versus, you know, one created by the candidate himself, and what kind of obligation does the blogger who did it have? You know,
we're going to start putting subtitles at the end of our videos.
I put a disclosure notice online.
Yeah. There are some legal ways of getting around it, but I think the jails will probably be filled with bloggers. MOA. they're gonna be filling them up. So there are ways, and you have to be knowledgeable and aware of the legalities. You know, such as, is the PAC going to pay for it? What's the PAC going to do? Or blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
You know, corporations now are spending a small fortune with public relations firms just monitoring blogs and chat rooms and things of that sort for any mention of their products or services that they market. And I'm sure that the political campaigns are doing the same thing right now. They're just monitoring.
Right.
And I think everybody's going to have to try to figure out how you're going to address those things. But I'll tell you what concerns me is it leaves a tremendous opportunity for people to hire companies to produce stuff and have it come in under the radar as not a 529, not a real contribution.
AstroTurf, basically.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to make the distinction between what is a paid political effort and what is not a paid political effort.
It's going to be very painful.
That's where the... That's
right,
where
Randy, you're a conservative. You'd like to just deregulate the whole thing, right?
I deregulate everything.
I'm with you there.
I'm actually with you on that one, too. Let's just let it all go. Let it fly.
Let it all out.
The market will dictate itself by each of our own individual reputations will be all we have, and that's all we need.
Well, in your YouTube views, let the market rule, man.
Yeah.
Well, just in terms of people will know where we come from by looking at the pattern.
Again, my number is for production services.
Please just let the market flow my way.
Let the market.
Just like with cash donations, I think people should be allowed. If George Soros wants to give $85 million to Hillary Clinton, he should be perfectly free to do that. All I say is that it has to be 100% identified as
transparent. Yeah.
It's completely transparent and reported within 24 hours.
Yeah, and hopefully this will force transparency as we move to the on. I don't know. Is it going to become more muddied, or is it going to
You're right. Oh, it's going to be just crazy. It's going to be crazy.
We're just creating more jobs.
I hope so.
The people have to watch the people
who are
watching.
We're going to make a stronger American economy.
They're more like campaign jobs.
Well, I think we're in a transition period, right?
But in the end, on the presidential election, remember that the typical voter out there is going to say, this person's strong, this person weak, I pulled this lever.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that undercuts the street.
Yeah, but speaking as the other sort of old guy here, you talking about the undercurrent, you know, the first thing that I thought of was Eagle Burger.
Right.
Could you imagine Eagle Burger today with YouTube and how fast that story would be out there? As I mean, it was fast in 1972. Sure.
But you're going to have to put a link in the show notes to this story.
Yeah, because that actually bubbled, that probably bubbled for about a week before it finally... It wasn't a thing of finding its way into the media. It was finding somebody with the testicular fortitude to actually write it and bring it in into the mainstream.
Whereas it would be like across the Twitter network tomorrow if like it turned out John Edwards had shock treatment.
That's right.
Well, one good thing is established, I think, by having the online presence and the YouTube nation going on in politics right now, is it really, it's probably shaking up the Washington, inside the Beltway status quo. I mean, it's got to be sort of having an impact on the insularity of the D.C. What do you think? You've been there. I've never lived in Washington.
It's a very crummy atmosphere. They all think they're smarter than everybody outside of the Beltway.
But none of this stuff is coming from really inside the Beltway. It seems to be coming from outside the Beltway.
To the best of my knowledge.
So is it going to have an impact on that country club mentality?
Yes. I think this is one of those circumstances where they actually feel like they're behind the curve and they haven't figured it out yet. And they like to dismiss it because they're all so well-educated and so bright. And
they're Ivy Leaguers.
And they know all of the people at the networks and all of those things. But I think they are in for a surprise. They are not anticipating, I think, just how wild this will get.
Mm-hmm. But they do have something to contribute.
Yes. Yes.
What would that be?
Outside the Beltway?
Inside the Beltway.
They have something to contribute.
Can't think of anything.
They're good at that. And the ability to get on CNN.
Well, exactly.
Why go through an Ivy League education, which, you know, if you read any papers that come from Ivy League schools, are different from other schools.
Oh,
yeah. And
it doesn't matter if you're applying to the Department of Justice.
No.
That's a fine school.
All bets are off there.
Three or four or
fifth. Harvard was a good university.
They'll be able to provide some level of policy analysis. It's just a matter of how arrogant they are about their abilities.
Yeah, it's a little political version of this TV show, One Versus the Mob. And it's really going to be, I think, the Washington versus the mob. And the mob, I think, is going to be very instructive.
Yeah. Do you think that, Randy, that they feel that they can counter this, that they're stronger, and that this is a gnat that's going to go away?
Instead of running 150 points worth of ads, they'll run 300 points worth of ads or 1,000 points worth of ads. I think they think that, you know, television national buys will, in the end, prevail over the noise that's going to be down to lower level. But
I think the Virginia Senate race scared them to death and the McConkie incident. I mean, that was... How do you battle that?
Well, politicians make mistakes all the time. They say stupid things all the time. When you're out on the road, you know, 15 hours a day, 17 hours a day, the tongue is just going to let something fly.
Yes, but now there's... I mean, now it's not the third page of local paper in the third paragraph.
Exactly.
It's on YouTube.
Every one of those mistakes is going to be magnified and blown up. And
That's where you smell the fear.
Well, what I'm going to find interesting here is, you know, when those things happen, you know, people who are presumed to be great and huge get taken down notches. And I'm anxious to see what we're going to have running who against who, because you're going to have these very human sort of people who are all going to be taken down several notches. And I think that what it's going to do is not only diminish those people, but I think that we need to watch very carefully to see if it diminishes the presence.
Well, like as I say it, there's two potential things that could happen as far as how politicians at a national level handle themselves. One, they could clam up and become even more scripted and even more controlled and say even less interesting things than they do now, if that's possible. Or they could become more open and more human and more willing to just own their mistakes. And
I think we're already seeing the second.
John Emmers has definitely done that already. You know, it's his response to the whole hair video was like, fine, let him make the videos. It's fun. I got to go on with my campaign. Yeah, I brush my hair. Whatever. And it kind of blew over, except on the Sean Hannity show. I mean, they're still, you know, beating that dead horse. But I think we're going to, I just noticed his online campaign a lot because it's so prevalent. It's so you know, ubiquitous. It's every, you know.
If Sean Hannity could ever afford a brush.
let's look at it another way. Bob Novak of the Evans and Novak Report, or formerly of the Evans and Novak Report, he was giving a speech this past week. He made a joke, and he said he thought that Fred Thompson had a very good chance of winning the presidency because most people seem to think he's done a great job as district attorney.
Yeah.
It's real. And in a lot of those people's minds, that is real. And they've been impressed with him as the district attorney.
It's
and the way he handles,
damn it, they're going to stick with him.
If you ask, there was a survey that came out recently about the Apple iPhone, and 90% of the people who were surveyed said that the Apple iPhone is better than the cell phone they currently have right now. The Apple iPhone has not been released yet.
I was going to say.
Nobody, none of those people have used the Apple iPhone.
Sure? Yeah, I'll give you an example just from the commercial side, the corporate side. They've done surveys in the last year or two where they go out and they test people's recognition of when was the last time you saw the little character Alka-Seltzer? On a commercial advertising office.
Show your age again.
Yeah, well, and they'll say...
Was there ever one?
Yes.
Yeah. And they'll say, well, yeah, I think it was maybe within the last year or the last 2 years. And it hasn't been on for like 25 years.
Yeah.
So there's this, again, there's this tremendous recall that people have. They remember bits and pieces the way we all remember bits and pieces of information, usually inaccurately. But you have a Fred Thompson kind of character who in all of his movies has been this tough stand-up kind of guy.
He's quite presidential.
He's quite
in movies.
And
sounds familiar.
And haven't we been down this road again?
But that's all you need. That's all you need.
Well, you know, actually, Fred Thompson does have a substantial record in the Senate, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's nothing to. It's real, in other words. There's certainly something
Senate
there.
Candidates, there hasn't been a Senate candidate to win the presidency since JFK.
Oh,
so they're going to have, it's an old point. Yes, it's
a anyway, we've gotten far, far away from Georgia politics.
Candidate.
So,
back to
Georgia. Final thing I wanted to talk about, because we've actually almost run out of time, but one candidate who's established a blog for himself, I don't think he's actually writing it, but Mr. Vernon is jonesing for Georgia, my CEO in DeKalb County. And I'm just wondering, who here thinks he's really running for Senate now? It's been a lot of speculation.
You know what?
I'm willing to
give a blank check to anyone that knows what Vernon Jones is doing.
The Mind of Vernon Jones.
At any point.
It's a miniseries.
Yeah. I don't know. There's the whole theory out there that he's you know, running some sort of an end around, and then he's going to take on Hank Johnson. But, you know, Hank Johnson's very popular in the 4th. He got the good press the other day from the Goodling thing.
Where, he got good press from that?
Yes, he did.
Jesus.
When Shelby and I were watching,
you got 5 minutes. Get to the point.
You know, it's funny because
I thought it was great.
I had the same reaction as you that it was terrible, and then I go like half an hour.
And then he started tangling with the committee chair. It's ridiculous.
But
no,
she's not answering my question.
You wrote about it and you said, "Damn, that sucked." And then everybody else who responded to it thought it was great. You know what? I haven't seen it, so I can't talk.
He got props on the Georgia gang for it. So
yeah, he did. That's what I'm saying. It was very bizarre because maybe it was because you're watching it in the moment and it's that sort of, you have a discomfort with the situation, whereas if you see it from a distance after a little time, it's not that big a deal.
Well, if you stack up Johnson to Vernon, as I said, Vernon is just the biggest ADD candidate next year. I mean, he's just everywhere.
Maybe all he's around the mayor of Dunwoody. Who knows?
Exactly. But Johnson, at least, is not an ABV case.
I think this is what megalomania looks like.
I agree.
Well, yeah. I used to write for a newspaper covering DeKalb County. I've sat in Vernon Jones' office. I've spent some time with him, and all I can tell you is the guy's batshit.
Well, he's quite charming.
So, he's very charming.
Well, and who better to represent?
Well, you know.
hey. Let's get back to our room. Yes.
I really think he'd be much more comfortable, you know, resurrecting the Gold Club, though. I think because he's kidding. That just seems more up his alley.
I will give him credit, though. I actually sat through the commission meeting the other day because they were voting on the Emory Village thing. Mm-hmm. And we did make it through a commission meeting without anyone walking out.
That's good.
Was that the second one in the row?
Yeah. two in a row now.
Has anyone picked up any of the rumors about former Governor Barnes being recruited?
Oh, yeah.
I saw
Well, he's polling at 40% versus 45% for Saxby right now, so.
Saxby is going to be an interesting race because he, 6 months ago, looked completely unassailable. But now he's become sort of a reflection of what happened on the national scene last year, in that he is being assailed on his right on the immigration issue. So his base is sort of splintering, and if the Democrats put a strong candidate in there, who knows?
Yeah. Well, you know, the base thinks he sold out.
The complete disintegration of the Republican Party in Georgia has been very interesting for the last couple
And you know
of
what's sad is that they're still going to win elections.
But, pardon?
You know, what's sad is they're still going to win elections.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Welcome to Georgia, the no-party state.
They're going to do it in a very fragmented
God hates a vacuum. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to.
They've got the infrastructure in place, so I think they're
That is the big deal.
They have visited and talked with the folks over the Republican Party headquarters. They have this state completely computerized, data banked, and identified right down to the House level. And if they need to turn out 2,500 votes in a particular precinct, they can do it. And the Democrats, their system, when I visited them and spoke with them, seems to be something that's opposite of that.
Which would be nothing.
We've got a big voter file. It's just all wrong.
Well, yeah. I hear, you know, everybody says Bobby Kahn. They all blame it on Bobby Kahn. He left the party in shreds. Is there any truth to that?
I'm not sure who's responsible, but I can tell you when I've gone and met with folks at both headquarters, the Republican offices feel like this humming, happening place with everybody working and busy. And when you visit the Democratic Party headquarters, you get the sense of people walking in the doors.
Well, the funny thing is that the Republicans are fighting against each other, but they actually have some power. The Democrats fight against each other, and they don't have any power, so it's, you know, they're fighting over nothing.
I'll give you my version of it. In probably in the late 80s or the early 90s, the Democratic Party of Georgia decided they could win elections by running TV ads and not by getting the grassroots out. And they just lost all their on-the-ground infrastructure. Meanwhile, the Republican Party, it's interesting. If you look at the campaign donations going back to 1980 or so, Republicans were getting about 20% of them in 1980, and all of a sudden it'd go up about 5% every time because all the corporate donors could see the writing on the wall. And right, you know, in the mid-90s, all of a sudden it was about 50-50 as far as where the campaign donations were going, even though the Democrats were running everything. And so at some point, the Democrats just decided, oh, you know, F the grassroots, you know. And that's what happened to them.
It's like a Major League Baseball team that spends all their money on free agents and forgets the farms.
Exactly.
You brought up a point earlier, Randy, and we've got the Senate race coming up.
Yeah.
Who the hell are they going to run? Mm-hmm. Where is the farm team?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, 20 years ago, the Republicans were winning every school board across the state.
They were going to school boards, county commissions, city mayorships, everything.
Yep.
And, you know, Democrats...
They know, right now, they know where their votes are.
They have some sheriffs here and there, but...
Well, that's about all the time we have today. So I want to thank everyone for being on the panel. And actually, we'll go around. Joe, you were pretty quiet today, but I'll let you start with your final thought.
Okay. My prediction is that we'll be able to predict if the internet has any effect on any presidential candidates. It will be on who loses, not who wins. It will all be about, you know, which new media people can be the nastiest against any particular candidate.
Grace?
She's so overwhelmed by your salient point.
I think that with the numbers you mentioned about Roy Barnes, obviously, it's help us, Roy Barnes, your only hope. Help us, Roy Barnes, your only hope. And I see Vernon Jones as their Lando Calrissian.
It's not a prediction. I'm just suggesting that everyone should very carefully watch the weekend of June 23rd. There will be a House Republican caucus down on the coast. And there is the potential for some startling news to come out of that in terms of changes in leadership.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't have anything specifically related to Georgia politics. Just say in between beers and hot dogs tomorrow, remember what the day is for and that some people paid the ultimate sacrifice so that we're able to sit here and do this today.
Hmm. There you go.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go back to the new media point and the inside the beltway versus outside the beltway fight that is going to come down. And I think that the ability of the old guard of political consultants are going to be about as well equipped to know what to do with new media as a $500 billion best military in the world knows how to deal with terrorist tactics. What's that analogy?
Preach on, brother.
It's asymmetric warfare.
I'll just congratulate Shelby for appearing in Hillary Clinton's response video.
I'm bringing sexy back.
I don't know if that was mentioned or not, so I just wanted to make sure that got thrown in there.
Live from his parents' basement.
Yeah. Chris Salica, you can eat it.
Well, hopefully it won't be so long till our next podcast. Thank you so much for listening. This is Joseph G. Talk to you next time.